Hi everyone, welcome back to our online Sunday school class. Thanks for joining us. This is Encounters with Jesus, especially as it's related to us from episodes of the Gospel of Mark. So thank you for tuning in each week, and thank you for those of you who've given me feedback and expressed appreciation for the class. We are looking at the story of Jesus healing a blind man. There's some unusual elements to this story. In the previous story, Jesus asked his disciples, "Having eyes, do you not see?" That's in Mark chapter 8, verse 18. So they were struggling with a form of spiritual blindness and unbelief. And now Jesus shows how he can heal spiritual blindness by healing this blind man. All of his healings are, in a way, enacted parables of spiritual parallels of what Jesus can do for us. So Mark chapter 8, verses 22 through 26, it says, "They came to Bethsaida, and some people brought to him a blind man and begged him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had spit on his eyes and laid his hands on him, he asked him, 'Do you see anything?' And he looked up and said, 'I see people, but they look like trees walking.' Then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again, and he opened his eyes. His sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. And he sent him to his home, saying, 'Do not even enter the village.'" Well, we love to sing hymns here at IPC, and one of the rich gospel metaphors that occurs frequently in our hymnody is that of blindness and restored vision. Probably the best example is John Newton's "Amazing Grace." "How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. 'Twas blind, but now I see. Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. Naught be all else to me save that thou art. Thou my best thought by day or by night, waking or sleeping, thy presence my light." And no surprise, it's a frequent metaphor in Scripture. 2 Corinthians 4:4 tells us that Satan, who's the god of this world, has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ. And it is God who at creation declared, "Let light shine out of darkness." He is the one who is recreating and reversing the effects of the curse by regenerating hearts and opening blind eyes so that the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ might banish the darkness. And it's Satan who peddles ignorance and falsehood and masquerades as an angel of light. We're told in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 14. Paul in Ephesians 5:8 says, "For at one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light." We were part of the kingdom of darkness, and now we've been transferred out of the kingdom of darkness into God's kingdom of light. And that was part of Jesus' ministry, to go around relieving the darkness, both literally and figuratively. And here in Mark's gospel, it is both. Restoring the blind man's sight, but also a living, enacted, breathing parable that illustrates spiritual truth. And it's done for the benefit, I believe, primarily for Jesus' disciples, who were drifting towards the blindness of the Pharisees. The Pharisees were blinded by hatred and hostility towards Jesus. He could do no right in their eyes. Their hearts were so hardened, impenetrable, resistant, unreceptive, like Siberian permafrost, that soil that you find in Siberia that is frozen soil that extends 5,000 feet below the surface. You cannot get through that no matter what. The disciples were committed to Christ, but from this story and from previous stories, there seems to be this trend towards spiritual blindness. It was encroaching rapidly. Powerful miracles performed in their presence, the feeding of the 5,000, the calming of the storm. And yet, as Jesus asked at the end of last week's story, "Do you not yet understand?" There was a dullness, a sluggishness. And today's story shows how Jesus recognizes that problem. He confronts it in them, but then he shows how he can relieve that encroaching darkness of sin and unbelief. And it plays out in the life of this man who has no vision, who is blind. And then he's initially given, I'm going to call it low vision. So he starts out with no vision. Then he's given low vision or partial vision. And this is an odd turn to the story. And then he has clear vision. His vision is fully restored. So no vision, low vision, and then clear vision. Well, let's start with the first one here, no vision. We meet this needy blind man in verse 22. It says they came to Bethsaida. Bethsaida is on the northeastern shore of the Sea of Galilee, predominantly Gentile territory, more so than Jewish. According to John's gospel, Bethsaida was the hometown of Philip and Andrew and Peter. So right away we sense there's a lot of eyewitness detail here. Maybe Peter whispering into Mark's ear here, telling him that this is what happened, recounting in vivid detail what was going on. And there were some people who brought to Jesus a blind man and begged him to touch him. We notice several similarities with a story that occurred in the last chapter, Mark chapter 7, verses 32 through 37, when a man who was deaf and mute was brought to Jesus. There also a group of unnamed people brought a man to Jesus, a needy man. And they begged Jesus to heal him and to touch him and to provide him with restored the ability to speak and hear, and hear its ability to see. And just like then, Jesus takes the man away from the crowd for a private audience, and he touches the diseased parts of the body, and he uses even spittle for the healing. And after the miracle, he commands silence. So the blind man is very much like that deaf, mute man before him, in a pitiful state. Blindness was endemic to ancient culture, with the lack of hygiene, the unavailability of effective medicine, exposure to the elements. Domestic trauma left many people blind, so clouded, empty, diseased, glazed over eyes would have been common to see wherever you went. And it's very hard, I think, for us to sympathize with someone who may be blind, especially if we've never experienced it. I came across an article while studying for this message about a legally blind woman named Christina, who also happens to be partially deaf as well, shared some of her experiences in an article on the internet. And she says that one of the biggest frustrations of being a blind person, or at least a legally blind person, is the loss of anonymity, because when you walk around with a cane or a seeing eye dog, people notice you and you stand out. You appear different from the rest of the crowd. And Christina says, normally that means I get excellent customer service. People at restaurants and stores go out of their way to accommodate me. But there are exceptions. Some people stare. Some people back away from her as if she's infectious. Some people overcompensate with their kindness. And she says overweening kindness can be insulting. But she says she's left with a general feeling of incompetence. She's broken or cracked more than half of her drinking glasses by dropping them on the floor, knocking them over. She forgets to check for cords on the ground, and she vacuums up electrical cords. She walks into people by accident. She says she stepped on her cats too many times to mention, and she's afraid that one of them holds a grudge against her. And this poor blind man evidently had friends or relatives who cared very much about him. It says they begged Jesus. They brought a blind man and begged him to touch him, knowing that Jesus has this healing touch. So they're desperate. Knowing that he has the power to heal. His reputation has preceded him, or else they have witnessed this themselves. Jesus, this renowned healer. And I think you have a picture here of what intercessory prayer looks like. People who themselves are not affected by this blindness, but they have a friend, they have a loved one who is needy. And so they come to Jesus with urgency, with fervency, asking that he would provide healing for them. And that's what you do when you intercede for someone else, whether it's a friend or a child or a close relative. You bring that person to Jesus, no matter the obstacle or difficulty, and you affirm that Jesus alone has the power to heal and transform this person's life. And you do so persistently, a persistent faith. So this pitiful man has no vision. Spiritually, he's like the Pharisees. If we're looking for a spiritual counterpart, it is the Pharisees, although the disciples are inching in that direction, if we think of the previous couple of stories. Pharisees had lots of head knowledge, experts in the law, trained in religious minutiae, but the Son of God humbly stands before them in all of his glory, in all of his radiance, in all of his power, in all of his splendor, and they cannot see it. In fact, they are actively hostile and hateful to him. Jesus moves towards this man in love to heal him. So the blind man then goes from no vision to low vision. Well, what do we mean by that? Low vision. This is where the story takes a surprising turn. Instead of just healing the man with a word, which we've seen him do in other stories, or with a simple touch, which we've seen him do in other stories, Jesus heals this man in stages, two different stages. We see stage one in verse 23. He took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had spit on his eyes and laid his hands on him, he asked him, "Do you see anything?" So here you have more eyewitness detail. Maybe it's Peter who's whispering over Mark's shoulder and telling him exactly what happened as Mark writes his gospel. Jesus takes this blind man by the hand. Mark continuing to portray Jesus as a compassionate, sympathetic, unhurried, patient, kind individual, the Son of God, leading this blind man to a quiet place where the miracle could be performed. By the way, it's not very easy to lead a blind person. Christina, the character, individual we met in the previous story about blind people, says that most humans are terrible at leading blind people around. They'll grab you, drag you, making you stumble and become disoriented. They'll forget to stop in front of some step or in front of a curb, and as the blind person, you will fall or trip. And even with instruction, guiding someone else is an intuitive exercise that requires a lot of care and skill. And that's what Jesus shows here. Jesus had patient skill. He takes the man's hand. Holding another person's hand, that's usually a very personal thing. We don't usually grab a person's hand that we don't know. But in this way, the way that Jesus is doing it here, it's a very personal thing. It's a very profound thing. Profound communication can take place through holding someone's hand. You can communicate care and tenderness, sympathy. And that's what Jesus does. He clasps this man's hand, communicating steadiness, personal connection. I'm here with you. I'm going to see you through this. We're going to deal with this problem. Now, how does the blind man respond here? Up to this point, the blind man has been silent. He's been brought to Jesus by his friends, by those who cared about him deeply. They begged on his behalf. We really don't know. Was he complicit? And his friends bringing him to Jesus. Maybe he was skeptical. Maybe he was reluctant. Maybe his faith was weak, non-existent. But here, he has this personal connection with the Son of God. Here is someone who really cares for me and is patiently and unhurriedly going to deal with my biggest problem. And maybe Jesus also understood something about the personality of this man. To heal him in public would be as painful as being blind. And so he takes him outside of the village, away from the publicity, away from the crowds, away from the hostile people in the crowds, away from the unbelieving, to a quiet place where this man's faith could blossom. So Jesus' actions here, they're deliberate. Nothing is accidental. His miracles are parables. They teach us something about his identity and mission. The Lord's action was a perfect illustration to the disciples of what he wanted to do with them in their spiritual blindness. As they looked on and watched, Jesus is communicating to them, I will gently take you by the hand and lead you into the light. These disciples who are struggling with sluggishness and slowness of mind and heart and encroaching on spiritual blindness, Jesus communicating to them that I will take you by the hand gently and unhurriedly and lead you into the light. Now, the passage does have some complexities here, like Jesus has a first attempt to restore this man's sight that seems to fail. He anoints his eyes with spittle, he puts his hands in his eyes, and there's some things that he does here that seem strange to us. He then asks the man, do you see anything? And the man says, I see people, but they look like trees walking. It's kind of puzzling why he does this. Why the partial healing? The man's vision is still blurry. Maybe this was a really hard case. Was Jesus having an off day? Did he fail? Did he not have sufficient healing power in the tank? Obviously the answer is no. Jesus performed other miracles that we would consider more difficult, quote unquote difficult, healing the Gerizim demoniac who was filled with hundreds if not thousands of demons, raising Jairus' daughter from the dead. Jesus did not lack for power or skill. This was a sign to the disciples that their spiritual understanding would come gradually, not instantly. Just as he led the blind man, so Jesus would lead them by the hand into the realm of understanding. At this point, as they are following him, committed to Christ, they have a limited understanding of Jesus and his mission and his identity. And so they ask certain things of him, make certain demands of him, rebuke him at certain times when they should not be, because there are things about him that they do not understand. And Jesus is going to gently, unhurriedly lead them into the light. At this point, they see him vaguely. Their vision of Christ is blurry. In the next episode, Peter is going to make his grand confession that Jesus is the Messiah, that he's the Christ. So they do have a measure of knowledge about Jesus, but it's going to take a while for them to grasp a more full and complete understanding of who Jesus is and how the cross is central to his mission. Truths that they will miss. And so there are spiritual realities that are blurry to them at this point, that Jesus is going to lead them slowly and gently into clarity. So no vision to low vision, then finally clear vision. So stage one, the man's vision is partially healed. Stage two begins in verse 25. Then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again, and he opened his eyes. His sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Now notice how Mark just piles up the phrases. Opened his eyes. His sight was restored. He saw clearly. What's Mark doing? Showing the completeness of this miracle. The darkness is banished. Light has shone into this man's heart. A gracious gift from God. Not from any human ability. And the healing then exemplifies as well the situation of the disciples who are brought through various stages in Mark's gospel themselves. At times they are non-understanding. They don't understand who Jesus is. And then they move to misunderstanding. We'll see this in the next episode when Peter identifies Jesus as the Christ, but then rebukes Jesus for speaking of the cross. So he understands some, but then he also misunderstands some about Jesus. And then eventually, by the end of Mark's gospel, you get to complete understanding when the centurion at the foot of the cross is truly, this was the Son of God. Peter will soon declare that Jesus is Messiah. The disciples will no longer be blind, but their vision will remain imperfect and blurred, for they do not understand fully the full meaning of what it means to be the Messiah. Only at the cross and the resurrection will they, like this blind man of Bethsaida, see everything clearly. Now, why is it that we are so prone to spiritual blindness? Sometimes it's temporal obsessions that blind us, like the disciples were preoccupied with our immediate physical needs or appetites. You know, in the previous episode, everything revolved around bread. There wasn't enough bread. We didn't fulfill our daily chores and get bread for all of us, and now we're worried, and here they are with Christ, who was a walking bread factory. Sometimes it's temporal obsessions that just seem to make life blurry and blind us temporarily, or it's our own hard-heartedness. We looked at that in the last couple of episodes as well. Just our own rebellion, hostility, resistance to Christ's lordship, unbelief. All of us have a mixture of unbelief in our heart. Blind unbelief is sure to err, we sing in the hymnal. Sometimes it's circumstances that are just so overwhelming, so painful, that cause our vision of Christ to become blurry. Life gets foggy and fuzzy. I love the story of George Matheson, the Scottish hymn writer. I think I've shared it before, that he learned as a teenager that he was going blind. And by the time he was in his graduate studies at Glasgow University, he was totally blind, had completely lost his sight. And then his grief was further compounded when his fiancée, who was unwilling to be married to a blind man, broke their engagement, returned his ring, left him devastated, rejected, humiliated. Rejected because of something he could not help. And that pain of rejected love always stuck with him in some measure, and he comforted himself continually with thoughts of the infinite, unconditional love of God. And he wrote to him, "O love that will not let me go." And he says, "O love," in that first stanza, speaking of God, "love, divine love that will not let me go, I rest my weary soul in thee. I give thee back the life I owe, that in thine ocean depths its flow may richer, fuller be. So there is a deprivation that can bring clarity. So circumstances can make life fuzzy for us, and then sometimes those circumstances can bring a measure of clarity. We have these glorious moments of clarity in the context of deep suffering. So while we're weighted down, the Lord may use those circumstances to just shine his light brightly into our heart. One of the most inspiring stories I've ever read is Unbroken, the story of Olympic runner Louis Zamperini, who endured intense physical and emotional suffering when his plane crashed during World War II, survived 47 days on a raft, captured by the Japanese, suffered brutal torture in prison camps. But he observed one of the bizarre things during when he was on the raft for 47 days, and then afterwards when he was in the prison camp, that deprivation brought clarity with some people, clarity of mind and vision. So for example, when some of the men were on the brink of starvation, they would simultaneously experience sparkling mental clarity. He said that one of his buddies became conversant in Norwegian in a single week, taking lessons from one of his cell neighbors, that this temporal deprivation brought eternal, not eternal, but this measure of clarity. And the same can be true for us spiritually as well, that temporal deprivation, loss in this life, weighs us down, can be very painful, but can also be moments of sparkling eternal clarity, where loss of earthly possessions brings heavenly treasures into focus. Now, maybe we don't see the beauty of Christ until our idols have been crushed, till certain hopes and maybe even legitimate but dreams that we've been clinging on to for too long and too tightly and too closely, they are vanquished, they are taken from us for whatever reason, and that temporal deprivation brings sparkling clarity about the glory of Christ. And here this man receives full sight, his vision is restored. And Jesus urges him, do not even enter the village. We call this the messianic secret. Jesus is trying to avoid excessive publicity and presumptive attempts to make him king. And the next passage will make clear, he's not there to quash the Romans, but to journey to Jerusalem to suffer and die for sins. So if you have been blinded by pride and unbelief, I hope it's not the blindness of the Pharisees, the outright hostility and rejection of the Son of God. But I think to some degree all of us struggle with a measure of blindness in this life because of our own sinfulness, even after we have committed our lives to Christ. So what do? We approach the Savior, like these dear friends of the blind man, and we ask for his help. Ask him to give us eyes to see the light, and only as Jesus keeps opening your eyes to him will you see him clearly. The disciples did have some spiritual vision, although at this point it's blurry. It needed to be clarified. It needed to be sharpened. They needed God to say, let light shine out of darkness, to have their souls bathed in the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ, so that their darkness would be banished. I once was lost, but now I am found. I was blind, but now I see.